People assume that time is a strict progression of cause to effect, but actually, from a non-linear, non-subjective viewpoint, it's more like a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey.
From days of long ago, from uncharted regions of the universe, comes a legend.
Tell me, Doctor, where are we going this time? Is this the 50s or 1999?
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. It's time. The Fandom Podcast Network proudly presents the Fandom Flashback.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious.
Welcome to the Fandom Podcast Network's special presentation of Fandom Flashback 1986, The Movies, 30 Years Later. In this special edition of the Fandom Podcast Fandom Flashback, we will cover the year in movies for 1986. Could this possibly be the best year in movies? We will debate this throughout this four-part special. Welcome to part two of the four-part Fandom Flashback 1986, The Movies. In this episode, we will cover the movies released in the months of April, May, and June of 1986. I'm Kevin, one of your hosts. I'd like to introduce my co-host for this time travel back journey to 1986. I'd like to welcome back Miss Amy Nelson. How are you?
I am doing fabulous, and I am just about ready to agree with you that 1986 is the best year of movies.
You know, we've had a little bit of a debate about that already, and I love it because, you know, the 80s, we could say, probably had the best years of movies, especially for all of us around a certain type of vintage. And so, you know, we have some, you know, if you look at 87, there's some good movies as well. Look at 82, 84. But that little giggle that you heard in the back is my other co-host. My fellow Fandom Podcast Network co-founder and co-host of our weekly Culture Clash show, Mr. Kyle Wagner. How are you, my friend?
Doing good. Just pulling back memories of 1986, the year I was traumatized by the death of Optimus Prime as a young lad.
That's right. A little Transformers reference there. Now, wait, hold on. Before we get into that, though, I got to ask you, in the last episode, in order to participate as a co-host for the Fandom Flashback 1986, you have to kind of verify your age. And Amy and I both did that in the last one. So Kyle, you have to tell the audience, how old are you?
In 1986, I would have been a wee lad of the age of 11, sneaking into the Goldstream Theater in Fairbanks, Alaska, to see whatever movie I could get my hands on, because in the middle of winter, there wasn't much else to do.
Okay. Amy, I would say that qualifies. 11 years old, right?
Yes, a bit younger, but we'll take you.
All right, cool. All right. Well, Kyle, you touched on probably something that traumatized a lot of children. Mention real quick what you're referring to, Optimus Prime there.
Well, Optimus Prime, obviously the leader of the Autobots in the Transformers. And we'll talk more about Transformers when its time comes up in the part three of the flashback. But the big thing was when that movie came out, nobody had any idea that they were actually going to kill Transformers. Because if you had ever watched the show as a kid, you know, they get damaged, they repair them, they throw them back out. Well, except this time it was time to obliterate the old toy line to bring in the new. So it was a full-on bloodletting of Transformers, culminating with the death of probably the most popular Transformer ever, and that was Optimus Prime. And there were many a kid of that young age who definitely had some emotions and were a little traumatized by that, so much so that later on that year when Hasbro put out the G.I. Joe movie, there was a scene where the leader of G.I. Joe, Duke, was supposed to have been killed. They changed it because children were so traumatized by the death of Optimus Prime and Transformers the movie.
Yeah, there was our good guys in cartoons and TV series. They weren't dying; they were escaping. Amy, was there anything that you remember back in the '80s, other than probably some of the primetime soaps and stuff like that, like Dallas and the J.R. Ewing stuff going on? But do you remember anything that traumatized you like that, or was it pretty much like you knew the good guys were coming back next week?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't remember being that traumatized by anything I saw on TV. Things were very a golden age, if you will. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like nowadays, you watch your Walking Deads
Lucille!
And
Game of Thrones
and your characters your favorite characters are getting, chomped up or bludgeoned or decapitated or what. I mean, we're getting to the point now where it's almost like they have to kill people off now to keep the ratings in, to get people to care about it. But yeah, right. We were watching stuff that we were rooting for the good guys and booing the bad guys, and so they always knew that there was an escape somewhere for our good guys, but things started to change later on. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I want to thank you guys for joining me for this special episode of Fandom Flashback, but I want to take the listeners back a little bit for those that are just tuning into the second episode. Don't feel lost. You can go back and listen to the first one. But we want to take you back in time so you know exactly what was happening back in 1986. Let's fuel up that DeLorean with a flux capacitor. Let's slingshot around to the sun aboard a captured Klingon bird of prey and take a step into that blue police box that's larger on the inside as we travel back to 1986 to remind us what was happening in pop culture, sports, politics, in the middle of the decade of decadence.
I have my hoverboard.
There you go. Now, Ronald Reagan was the president in 1986. And as I mentioned last time, there was a breakthrough in the U.S. arms talk between Reagan and Gorbachev, and that led to eventually disarming talks. The Cold War was slowly coming to an end. Reagan's administration came under scrutiny with the whole Iran-Contra thing. Gas was under a dollar. Boy, do we miss that, right?
Oh, no kidding.
Kyle, how much is gas down there in the Bradenton-Tampa area right now?
It's been fluctuating between about $2 and $2.14 for the last month.
And that sounds nice.
Yeah, very much so.
Amy's like, we're paying a little more up here. You can get a new house for just under $90,000. Rent was about $385, and you can buy a car for under $10,000 back in those days. Now, let me ask you this, Kyle, since you're a sports fan. Do you remember the 85 Bears defeating the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl?
You mean the Super Bowl shuffle and William the Refrigerator Perry causing an earthquake?
Yes.
Yeah, 86 was quite an interesting year in sports that year, I got to tell you.
Yes, it was. Was there anything that kind of stood out for you that year?
Well, of course, you've got to go right to baseball in the World Series as the ball goes through Bill Buckner's legs. And the rest, as shall we say, was infamous history for the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, that took a long – it was like a curse that took them to – long time for him to shake that off until recently. So yeah. Go ahead.
The other big thing was 86 was also really the year that Mike Tyson hit the scene and hit the scene hard. But you think back to the 80s in sports, especially that second half. I mean, Mike Tyson immediately comes to mind.
Yeah, that's when he started to really break into the heavyweight circuit there. We did mention that the Chicago Bears did win, but later in the year, the Giants would go on to win the Super Bowl in the next year. But they were the dominant team through through this year. Boston Celtics won the championship, Stanley Cup championships. Do you remember who that was? Care?
Well, I'm thinking it was it Edmonton,
Montreal Canadiens.
Okay, yeah, I know that was in the middle of the Edmonton Gretzky Messier teams and everything like that. But I know Montreal snuck in one, and somebody else did too. But that Edmonton really kind of dominated the '80s when it came to the NHL.
Okay, Amy, I got a trivia question for you. In Wimbledon, who do you think won the men's and who won the women's?
Yeah, that's so outside of my wheelhouse.
Well, I have a guess as far as the women's goes, because if I remember, that would have been probably Martina Navratilova.
Correct. Correct. And Boris Becker was the men's.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The NCAA football champions was Penn State. Basketball champions for NCAA was Louisville. Kentucky Derby, some horse named Ferdinand. And the World Cup winner was Argentina.
Yes, 86 was a World Cup year.
Now, I got to ask you, Kyle, do you remember, you know, do you have any crushes on certain actresses that were really popular back in those days?
86. I gotta think back. I mean, being 11, it was kind of that time period. We kind of had Jamie Gertz around that time period. We had Lori Loughlin make her first appearance, really, in that movie Rad. Those are a couple that spring to mind. You had some Kelly Preston at that point too, didn't you?
Yeah. Kathy Ireland, you remember her?
Oh, how can you forget Kathy Ireland? She reigns in Spain.
And we may have mentioned in the last episode, but Amy, do you remember who the sexiest man of the year was on People magazine?
Oh, no.
Mark Harmon.
Oh.
I think it was at Summer School he came out with.
And, I think Summer School was a little bit later, but Mark Harmon has won that award several times, if I'm not mistaken.
Probably, yeah. Carol Alt was popular, of course. Kim Basinger, Daryl Hannah, Rachel Hunter. Mm-hmm. This was kind of probably the beginning of the supermodel phase as well.
Yeah, Elle McPherson. Of course, didn't we have Elle McPherson around that time too?
Yep, Kelly LeBrock, Heather Langenkamp, of course, Madonna. Dolly Parton was big too.
Yeah, she was huge at that time period.
And of course, was it T.J. Hooker, Heather Thomas?
Well, no, T.J. Hooker was Heather Locklear.
Heather Locklear and Heather Thomas. Oh, she was on. Was it the Fall Guy?
Yeah, Fall Guy.
That's right. Did you ever watch that show, Amy? Fall Guy with Gil Gerard.
Was it Gil Gerard? I don't think it was Gil Gerard. It was $6 Million Man.
No, but this is what he did later on.
Yeah,
I thought.
I don't think
I'm drawing a blank.
I know it wasn't Gil Gerard.
No, it wasn't.
Lee Majors.
Thank you.
Yeah, $6 Million.
Thank you. Yeah, that's right. He was the stunt man. I think that's was that when Heather the one with Heather Thomas.
Yeah, that was Heather Thomas, and that was kind of ending its run in by 86.
That's right.
You had the A team. Didn't you have the A team still running in 86?
Yeah, yeah. A team was still running. I think. Yeah, yeah. Now also, some of these pop musicians. You know, we have Robert Palmer, Van Halen, Police. Prince was on there as well. Was there any artist?
Huey Lewis and the News.
Okay. You know, I would pay good money to see them play live.
Yeah, I think they're probably a much better live band than they. I mean, they put out some good stuff. Of course, they did all the Back to the Future soundtrack and everything like that. But that was Huey Lewis was very big in around 86.
They had some great hits, and you know, I wouldn't want to see them unless the News was with them, because his band was really good.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough. They came to Vegas, and I got to get some tickets with a friend of mine, and we went and saw them.
When was that?
I'm gonna say 3 years ago.
Really? Were they good?
Oh, fabulous. High energy. I mean, he's still, and his voice, I mean, he's still got it. It was great.
That's great to hear, because every time I hear them on the radio, I'm like, I would love to see these guys, but it has to be the News. The News has to be with Huey.
Yeah.
Now we got a little background on, we talked about the disasters that happened. We talked about the Challenger disaster and of course the Chernobyl disaster as well. Those happened in, year of 86. And I know Amy had talked about her experience with the Challenger disaster. You were a little bit younger, Kyle, but what memories do you have of the Challenger disaster? Well, were you watching it in school with like a lot of us?
Here's the thing, and this is where being in Alaska really actually made us affect differently on that news. Because of the time difference, it was very early in the morning in Alaska. It had already happened by the time we were going to school.
So about what time would you say that was
for
you?
Probably for me, I'm going to say that would be about, you know, 8:30 in the morning, Alaska time. So we were coming we were watching the video of it or watching the news feed. It had already happened. So there was actually talk of closing the schools in Alaska that day.
Well, let me ask you this then. because you got the news as you guys were coming to school and you didn't watch it live, was there any debate of whether or not they were going to show it to you because of how traumatic it was?
I think it was probably at least because the upper grades they would show it to. I think they kind of cut it off, maybe didn't show it to, like, I think it was fourth grade down. And I was in fifth grade at the time, and they showed it to us. And I know they showed it in the high schools because my sister was in high school at the time, and they showed it there. The one, though, that, I mean, and as terrible as that was, you know, the one big thing that we were really keeping a very close eye on, though, was the Chernobyl disaster.
Okay, well, that's a good transition into that one. What was it that, you know, well, I just thought about it. You're in Alaska. You're a lot closer to USSR than we were. Is that why?
Part of it, yeah. I mean, now, granted, we're not Sarah Palin close where we can see Russia from our... our deck.
But still, there's
yeah,
that.
I mean, there was. I mean, at the time, because people really still didn't have a full hand grasp of nuclear disaster like this. I mean, the state of Alaska was keeping a close eye on things to see which way that cloud was going to go.
Was there talk on, you know, how to handle that if it did? I mean, you know, what was that like?
Not so much to how to handle it if it did, because they didn't want to panic people, but. You know, you could tell, especially, you know, when you talk with the adults and everything, there was a sense of, we need to, you know, a sense of, okay, don't panic, but we need to pay attention to what's going on here.
Gotcha. Yeah. Interesting. I it just dawned on me that you're a little closer to the problem there. Well, that obviously brought worldwide attention to handling such nuclear programs and making sure safety protocols were done correctly, and it's that was something that was kind of freaking us all out a little bit, because, you know, a lot of cities in the U.S. that had nuclear plants around them, they were like, well, could this happen here? So yeah, that was a big deal. Well, 1986, the reason why we're here, gave us a great year in movies, and that's what we're here to celebrate on the special presentation of the Fandom Flashback. With this being the year 2016, we're celebrating the 30th anniversary of all 1986 movies. And many of these movies became legendary with the box office receipts to back it up. Some of them became cult classics, and some 1986 movies were so bad they were good. And, well, some were pretty bad. 1986 also gave birth to many of our current classic fandoms that we still celebrate today, like Highlander, Aliens, the Robotech movie, and of course, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, Transformers. We will celebrate, debate, and discuss this fantastic year of movies of 1986. Now, for part two, we're going to cover the months of April, May, and June. Now, I'm going to list the movies off here in April. Number one, April 1st, the movie Miracles came out. Now, this is a movie in April 9th I've not heard of. Dr. Otto and the Riddle of the Gloom Beam. April 11th, we had Band of the Hand, Critters, Offbeat, Violets Are Blue. April 18th, we had At Close Range, Desert Bloom, Murphy's Law. And April 25th, we had 8 Million Ways to Die. Amy, I want to start with you. I was wondering if... April's probably not a great year here in 1986, but was there anything in here that jumped out at you?
Not a single movie. I looked at the lists. I went to the IMDb and was trying. I do remember seeing the movie ads for Critters and saying that's scaring me to death. And as I mentioned last time, not going to go see it. So I didn't see that. And there is not one that even jogs any bit of memory outside of Critters, and just seeing it and say, nope, not going to see that's too scary.
I just want to mention real quick, Dr. Otto and the Riddle of the Gloom Beam. That may have been Jim Varney's first film before he went on to do his movies that I've never seen, but were kind of a hit for a lot of people because he did all those kind of goofy...
The Ernest movies.
The Ernest movies, yes. Jim Varney, Ernest. This was his Jim Varney, Ernest as Dr. Otto. So never saw it.
Never saw it.
Kyle, I want to ask you before I go into my stuff here. Is there one of these that jump out at you?
Well, first of all, there's a couple of them I'm familiar with. This is a time when especially April was always such a slow month for movies because everybody was saving everything for the actual summer blockbuster season, which actually really didn't kick in and at this time till usually end of May, beginning of June. Things have changed so much now. I mean, we have what they call summer blockbusters, and they're coming out in the beginning of April. A couple that come to mind, Murphy's Law, Charles Bronson, when he was still considered a legit action star in Hollywood, basically kind of not a Death Wish film, but very similar to the same kind of role for him.
I remember seeing that on VHS later on.
Yeah, that's how I had seen it too. Critters stands out. That's kind of a cult sci-fi type horror film, kind of capitalizing a little bit off of Gremlins. You had a lot.
Let me ask you about Critters, because I never saw it because I loved Gremlins so much. That came out in like 83, 84, I think. It seemed kind of like it wanted to take off on that idea, but more of kind of a horror comedy way. Am I getting that right?
Somewhat. In this case, the critters were aliens that came to our planet. And when you go back, there's a lot of like known 80s names in this film. You've got Dee Wallace playing the lead character, one of the lead characters. You've got Scott Grimes, who a lot of people would know from possible. He's one of these actors he shows up in a lot of things. I think some of the more recent stuff he's probably more well known for is he had a run on that TV show Party of Five. He was also on several seasons of ER before it hit.
Got Emmett Walsh as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
But one of the keynotes is a very young Billy Zane making an appearance.
And I'm just seeing here, Ethan Phillips, Neelix from Voyager was there as well.
Yes. And I mean, basically the premise is these creatures are actually kind of escaped convict kind of creatures. There's a lot of them. They're basically
from another planet.
Yeah, they're basically eating machines, and they come to this small town. They're just causing havoc, and these other alien bounty hunters come chasing after them. And the bounty hunters are rather funny in the aspect of these two bounty hunters. One of them disguises himself as like looking like this hair metal band famous rock star, so everybody's freaking out over him. The other one is constantly changing his form because he can't decide on one he likes. And what ends up happening by the end of the movie, there's a person who plays the town drunk, which is Don Keith Oper. He played Charlie. He ends up joining these bounty hunters and going into space.
Why do I kind of want to see this now?
Kevin, it's one of these films. Critters was one of these films that, you know what? USA Up All Night, Monster Vision, something like that. You would have watched it on something like that, probably gotten a little bit of enjoyment out of it, just as far as a retro cult classic kind of thing. But it's not what I would call a great movie.
Amy, are you rolling your eyes at me right now?
Oh, no, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Sure, we're buying that one, Amy.
Now, I have a couple of films here that do jump off the page for me. And actually, one of my favorite movies of the entire year has come out in April.
No.
And that is Band of the Hand. Originally, I thought it was a Michael Mann directed one, but it's directed by Paul Michael Glazer, who is Starsky from Starsky and Hutch. And he's gone on to direct other films and a lot of episodic television. It took place during that time when Miami Vice was huge on television. And it takes place in Miami and the Everglades. And it's basically about, it stars Stephen Lang, who we know from, you know, a lot of great films. Avatar, he played, he was in Tombstone as Ike Clanton. Just a really great character actor. He always looks different. Really good actor, one of my favorites. And he basically gets these five criminals that are from diverse cultures, and you know, a couple of them are rival gang members, and there's no hope for these guys. And he takes them down to the Everglades and teaches them how to work together and live off the land. And finally, they start to bond. And the final test is, he says, "Look, you guys gotta come find me." And they have to like go through the Everglades. They have to, you know, live off the land and find him. And once they find him, they say, you know, "Look, now you've worked together as a team. I got one more thing you guys can do." And they have to go into this inner city project and basically turn this kind of crack house into a livable place for these people to live. But then, of course, the local drug dealer comes into town and threatens them. And Stephen Lang's character has some army background. And he basically tells them, saying, look, you know, you guys don't have to be here for this. But they decide to band together, like band of the hand. And I think it's a young Lawrence Fishburne is the drug dealer.
Yeah, I'm looking at the, and, I'm looking at the IMDb right now, Kevin. There's actually quite a few names I recognize. A very young Lauren Hawley, Leon.
Oh, yeah, she was really cute.
And can never go wrong with James Remar.
Yeah, James Remar. Yes, from
the Warriors.
Whatchamacallit? Yes, Warriors, and recently, I'm sorry. What's the film? What's the TV show with the killer?
That's narrowing it down.
No. The TV show that he did with he played the father on Dexter. Sorry, he was Dexter's father. Yes. That's what I meant to say. But it was just, it had a really good soundtrack. And of course, at the end, they have to, you know, fight the drug lords. And, you know, it's one of those films that, like, it would never happen, but it was great to see all these characters come together. And it's one of my favorite films, a really good cult classic. But it totally had that Miami Vice feel to it. And it was shot in location. That's one of my favorites. The other one that I liked too was 8 Million Ways to Die.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Jeff Bridges and Rosanna Arquette. And what's so funny is I was recently Laserdisc hunting, and I came across 8 Million Ways to Die on Laserdisc, and I picked it up for like $2. Wow. Did you like this movie too, Kyle?
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've watched it, but you going through and I remember, I mean, again, you're talking a very young Jeff Bridges. You've got Miss Arquette, who we were talking earlier about the crushes of the 80s. I know a lot of people had a crush on either of the Arquette sisters at that
point. Alexandra Paul, who is in
Baywatch fame. Show? Alexandra That's Paul, right. Baywatch fame.
Andy Garcia.
So good solid cast on this film.
Also, the screenwriter was Oliver Stone.
And that's kind of the one thing, and you guys talked about this in part one, is going back through these movies and seeing so many actors that we revere now, or and seeing these early films that they got their start in, or while they were still kind of making their climb to their level of fame that they currently have.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what do you say we go into May? There's a few movies in there I think we might recognize.
Oh, yes.
All right. Let's start off with May 2nd. We had Blue City, Saving Grace. May 9th, we had Dangerously Close, Fire with Fire, Short Circuit. May 16th, there was this tiny cult film called Top Gun. I'm sorry, Top Gun. Yeah, there he is. You guys heard of that film, right?
I think so.
Maybe.
May 21st, Crawl Space. May 23rd, ooh, one of my favorite guilty pleasure films, Cobra, yes. With Absolutely. Sylvester Stallone.
Absolutely.
The disease. I'm the cure. Then we had Poltergeist 2, The Other Side. And May 30th, we had kind of an Indiana Jones type of ripoff film called Jake Speed. I do remember seeing that on VHS. Let me start with you, Kyle. Let's we know Top Gun's the big one here. Okay. Yeah. Let's kind of talk about that last. Other than Top Gun, I want you to pick a film that jumps out here the most for you.
Well, one quick note with this. May 86 was a busy month for Ally Sheedy. She had a couple of movies come out this month in Blue City and Short Circuit.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, there's two that really jump off on the ones we've mentioned, Kevin. Obviously, like you, Cobra. I mean, I think that's still one of Stallone's most underrated films.
And you know what? That movie... It's such a guy film, you know.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. It's absolutely a guy film.
But... I got to tell you, when it comes to cars in movie, cars that aren't supernatural, talk, have a brain, fly, go back in time. He had that 50 or 49 Merc that was cut. It had the nitrous inside of it. That car was beautiful.
Yes.
And today is one of my favorite movie cars of all time. And of course, you know it. wasn't he working with his girlfriend in that film as well?
Yeah, we know how that kind of turned out. One of the things I remember about Cobra was the main villain in that film, the knife he had.
Brian Thompson, yes.
That knife he had, where he had that spiked handle on that knife.
That curved blade with, the spiked handle. Brian Thompson went on to Star Trek fame, play a couple of Klingons and some Jem'Hadar, and he's been a great character actor. He's got that face, that really kind of scary face.
Yeah.
Brigitte Nielsen obviously was the on-screen love affair here, and we should mention that it's called Cobra because his name is Marion Cobra Cobretti.
Exactly. Now, but you know, I look at this list. We had Poltergeist 2, you know, trying to capitalize on the fame of Poltergeist. Continuing, I mean, wasn't it after this Poltergeist 2 that the little girl passed?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know how soon after, but unfortunately she did. Yeah.
But I mean, one that stands out to me outside of the obvious in May is I will always have a warm spot in my heart for Short Circuit.
Let's talk about Short Circuit. Everyone fell in love with Short Circuit. And Amy, I want to go to you here. Did you see this when it first came out in theater?
I'm pretty sure I did. If not, it would be on VHS. I remember seeing it over and over because I had younger brothers and they just loved it. And I mean, you fell in love with number five. It was beyond cute and a good, you know, is this artificial intelligence and is he alive? Isn't he alive? The classic debate and, you know, and you just love it when he says, I am alive, you know, and it's like, yes, you
Input.
Are. Don't, you know?
Input.
So number five, he was part of a group of experimental robots.
Nova.
In a lab. And then he got electrocuted. Is that right? Now, if I remember, were they experimental robots for like military robots?
Yeah, military.
That's right.
It was a company called Nova, and they had Steve Guttenberg in this film played the creator of it when he was not really happy with the military aspects of the that they were going to use these robots for. In the case of number five, it was at the charging station, and the charging station got hit by lightning. So kind of the old Frankenstein monster thing. Now, there's two things about this film that I have to especially bring up, Kevin. One, Fisher Stevens playing Indian sidekick in a role he could never do today. would never, ever be allowed. But he was classic in these films.
And he was hilarious in that movie.
the other thing is, of course, we get the classic DeBarge song of Who's Johnny?
That's right. Of course, Ally Sheedy was so cute. I love the scene where her and Johnny Five are kind of dancing, you know. I love the scene too when you see number five like looking over all the Earth's history and realizing how bad we are, and you know, and it was just a really feel good film, and it did get a sequel as well. And that's when Steve Guttenberg, he was really on top of his game then too.
He had that Police Academy films. He's soon to come with Three Men and a Baby. He was on top of his game. And really the robots at the time, that was pretty high tech. Those were very impressive machines.
And how, you know, it's like how they could make E.T. So you like E.T. and Yoda, you can fall in love with these guys because they're able to show emotion in one way or another. The puppeteers and people that did Johnny Five, number five. I mean, the way they were able to get the emotion from him as well as the voice. You know, you could feel for this character. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can remember seeing it in the theater and that point where you actually think they had blown up number five. There were a lot of kids who were very upset at that point.
Speaking of Saturday Night Fever, Saturday Night Live, Saturday Night Fever, the director John Badham did direct Saturday Night Fever and War Games.
Oh,
yes,
War Games.
I was
going to
bring
classic.
That up.
Yeah.
Very much.
So now I think, Kevin, we have to deal with the elephant in the room when it comes to May.
Yeah, nice big elephant that likes to fight MIGs. Is that the one you're talking about?
Hey, you know, great balls of fire.
All right, let's talk some Top Gun right now. I recently, as of like 4 or 5 days ago, I watched this film again, and as I mentioned to you guys before we started recording, this movie still holds up.
Oh,
everything about this movie still holds up. The music, the cast, it just everything. Now, Amy, we're having you on again because we know this was your probably your favorite movie of the year. I want you to confirm that, and I want you to tell me when you saw it for the first time what your first reaction was. First of all, is this your favorite film of the year?
I would say yes, most definitely.
Did you see it opening weekend?
Let me see. I probably saw it the weekend after because my birthday is May 22nd. And so I probably saw it, as a birthday, if I remember. My birthday has always been great for good movies to come out on my weekend. So, I think it's a great guy movie. It's a great girl movie. I mean, you have this flawed character and, he's got this big chip on his shoulder because his dad, everyone thought his dad did it wrong. But then we find out his dad did it right. And, and he loses his friend and he has the guilt of that. I mean, it's so relatable because for me that it's like, you try and be this perfectionist. You try and do what you think is best. And that's what he's doing. Tom Cruise's character is doing all this time. And yeah, he's got the big ego, but that's what makes you fall in love with him. And then you have Kelly McGillis.
Yes.
Yeah. Kelly McGillis. And, she comes in, she's like an awesome superior who's in a major position and, not just some waitress or whatever. I mean, she is a very good female role model, which, is really good for in 1986. And you see them come together, but then there's issues. I just think the story is good on so many different levels. And you have the great, with the airplanes flying around. I mean, that is so much fun too. And the filming of it is incredible. And the music, it relates to me on so many different levels. I love it.
Kyle, when did you first see this film?
I saw Top Gun probably about a week after it hit in the theaters. There's so many things I remember about this film. One of the things I remember with its run is I believe at the time it set the record for longest release staying in the theater at one time. Because if I remember correctly, it stayed in the theaters for almost 10 months.
Yeah, it was there for a long time.
Yes. I mean, there's so many things that stand out to me. One, some of the best fighter scenes of the time, especially after you guys talked earlier about Iron Eagle, which is a love of mine as well. But I mean, when you compare the fight scenes from Iron Eagle to this, it's not even a comparison as far as the fighter scenes. Such amazing performances across the board. I mean, obviously Tom Cruise, Val Kilmer. Tom Skerritt was amazing in this. You had
loved him in it.
I am personally a huge Anthony Edwards fan. I loved him in this. Yeah. And it makes me sad that to this day, Anthony Edwards has always regretted doing this film.
Why is that?
He's just said it's, he felt like he got people only saw him as this character for so long afterwards. And really wasn't until he did ER that he felt like he had got some distance from that. Kelly McGillis was outstanding. Michael Ironside in this film, very good.
Chester, yeah.
let's not forget, we even had a young Tim Robbins in this film.
That's right, yeah.
I mean, so...
He was Merlin.
Yeah, you add in the music. I mean, we use it in the opening of these shows, that Top Gun theme, the amazing soundtrack by Kenny Loggins. This is probably the closest thing I'm going to say to at the time, and probably it's still one of the top five standard bearers of the perfect summer film.
That is, I can't argue with that. That I think you're right. I did see it. I think I did see it opening weekend. I remember the pre-hype for this movie was just everywhere. And of course, Tom Cruise was big on the scene, and there was still that kind of Cold War, the Russians are bad, and there's still that mystery behind their firepower and what weapons that they had. So there was, they were building on that type of tension, which made you want to see this film as well. And, you know, Amy's right. This was a perfect guy film and a perfect, you know, girl film. It is, it captured everything for everyone. And I remember I saw it more than once, and I remember seeing it like maybe several months later, because it just, it was always hanging around. It was always there. And, you know, like you said, the cast was great. I love Tom Skerritt as Viper. And, you know, I just, there's just so, it's so funny how many lines people can quote from this film and how they, you know, people will, you know, use them today. Amy, is there any particular quotes that jump out at you that you may still say or that you just will never forget?
Well, we did ended the last one with, I feel the need, the need.
For speed.
I mean, you just, and then you just go. I mean, it just sets you right up to get going and do what you got to do. There's, you know, playing on the piano. What's the one?
Great Balls of Fire. That's right.
No, take me to bed or leave me forever.
Yes.
Yes. Of course, Top Gun also.
Meg Ryan had a short scene stealer there. I loved her.
Yeah. Oh. She was amazing in it.
What about you, Kyle? You have any quotes from the film that that jump out at you?
Smile for the birdie.
Diplomatic relations.
Yeah, no, everything is so quotable in that film. I mean, everybody got a line. I mean, everybody got a line. One little fun side note, though, too, Kevin. In the scene where we see Goose's family for the first time and he gives his son an airplane like he flies, it's actually a Starscream toy.
Are you serious?
Yeah, go back and look at it. It's a Starscream toy.
It's a Transformer?
It's a Transformer. He gives him a Starscream toy. I remember seeing that going, oh, man, that's just awesome. But no, I mean, now I got a question for you two. Be honest. How many times did you guys actually go see this in the theaters over that summer?
I lost count. I saw it several times. What about you, Amy?
I'm thinking it's going to be three, because I know I saw it with my girlfriends, and I know I saw it with both of my parents. So that's three minimum, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to say it was at least 5 to 7 for me.
It was one of those films that you were cheering, like whenever you came out of a Rocky film, you were cheering. You know, back to the quotes, you know, there's so many of them. Of course, one of my favorites, you know, in the bar, you know, Maverick goes to Goose saying, Goose, you know, I think she's lost that loving feeling. But and then Goose goes, no, she hasn't.
No, she hasn't.
Now, I want to ask you guys, because we all have our favorite scenes in Top Gun, because there's so many good scenes. You know, there's the volleyball scene the chicks go all crazy for. And
ooh, it's getting warm in here again.
Yes. Well, let's start with you, Amy. What's your favorite scene and why?
Well, the volleyball scene, for sure, is a favorite. And I really, there's too many. The where they're explaining how they're flying inverted, you know, right.
When Charlie comes in and makes her appearance, yeah.
Yes, exactly. I do like the scene with Tom Skerritt where he goes to his house and, you know, and Tom Skerritt says, you know, I knew your dad and your dad did it right. I mean, that just is a pivotal moment for the character. I really do.
That's where like he goes. I'm not going to blow sunshine up your skirt.
Yeah. Yeah. Or when he ends that, and if you need somebody to be your backup, you call me.
Exactly. Yeah. And support.
What about you, Kyle? What's one of your favorite scenes?
Oh, well, you've got to go with the inverted scene. I mean, that's just classic.
What a great intro to.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, you know, you've lost that loving feeling.
Oh yeah,
and I'm sorry. And so, to this day, I think that's still one of the best fade outs. And in from using that piece of music to go from fade out of the end of the movie to into those credits with that song is still amazing.
Yeah, it is. I have two scenes. Obviously, you know, the inverted scene with the introduction of Charlie, you know, then Charlie goes, "So you're the guy." And he goes, "I'm the guy."
You're the one.
That's right. You're the one. There's two scenes that are, there's one that's kind of a montage, and then there's another one that really get me each time. Let's talk about the scenes between Charlie and Maverick, where he is, this is after the inverted scene, and she chases him down wanting to know more about the MIG, and he's kind of doing the power play with her, and he goes, "Relax about the MIG." You know, he's kind of like trying to feel her out and figure out what's going on. And then there's those scenes in the, like the elevator with the sexual tension, you know, and he goes up to her in the elevator and he puts his arm up there and he's really close to her and he's kind of, he's totally doing the dude thing, you know, and
yeah,
but she's eating it up.
And then, how can you not?
And these are the scenes that I hear women around me in the theater going, and they're just all falling. And Tom Cruise's stardom is just shooting way up. He's becoming this sex symbol, and he's totally selling it. I mean, he's good looking. He's got that $1 million smile. And then, of course, you know, Kelly McGillis is beautiful, and the chemistry between those two just pop. Yeah. I mean, whenever they're on screen, it's just, you know, and then, you know, when he comes to her house and he's late, he's like, "Can I use your shower?" And she's like, "No, I'm hungry. Let's eat." But there's one other one that was really emotional that really kind of gets to me every time. It's after Goose dies. Mm. And people are kind of afraid to go up to Maverick. And, of course, there's this competitiveness between Maverick and Iceman, and it's abrasive at first, and you know, Iceman's saying, "You're dangerous." He's saying, "Yes, I am." But there's that scene where Maverick he's in his underwear and he's in the locker room, and Iceman comes up to him, and Maverick knows it's him, and you see Iceman kind of hold stuff back, but he goes, "I'm sorry about Goose," and he pauses and he takes a breath. "Everyone liked him." And that was the reason why I really liked that scene so much, is because Iceman is trying to be a better man there. He's not trying to say Goose is dead because of you. He's being the good guy. He's saying, you know, that's his way of kind of saying, I'm sorry. And, you know, I'm not, you know, blaming you, because later on, you know, when they're having the final dogfight scene and they help each other out, and then there's the total bro thing, you know, "You can be my wingman anytime." And he goes, "No, you can be mine." You know, that's kind of like the beginning of them kind of coming together. And for some reason, that scene always resonates with me. You know, he could have said, you know, "Goose is dead, you're a jerk," but he took the high road. And that's when you start to kind of like really like Iceman, because he's been kind of like the jerk, but, you know, he's always really good. So I just want to mention that. That's one of the scenes that I really like. And there's so many great scenes in that movie that it's just so memorable. And, you know, that's why we have to give it some extra love here on this special, because it meant so much to us. Now, let me ask you guys, I just thought of this. I know there have been rumors of them doing a sequel.
No.
Well, the latest that I heard was that Tom Cruise was interested, and that he would be obviously this instructor guy, and that the last I heard about a possible idea was that they're going to deal with unmanned drones or something like that. Have you guys heard anything about this?
I've heard rumors.
Not at all.
Yeah, I've heard rumors of sequels for years, and this is just one of those movies I just want it left alone. You have perfection. Don't mess with it.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. What about you, Amy? Would you see a sequel even if Tom Cruise starred in it?
Well, yeah, I guess Tom Cruise would be the Tom Skerritt role, and, you know, the fatherly and stuff like that. I probably would see it, but I sort of hope that they don't, because it's such a perfect movie. Why mess with perfection?
Agreed. Yeah. Well, I think, is any more, anything else you guys want to say about good old Tom Cruise and Kelly McGillis before we go on to June?
I think we both know that was, I mean, especially for Kelly McGillis, that was her big movie, and Tom Cruise, you know, one of the greatest actors of our generation. So,
right. What about you, Amy? Any last words about Top Gun?
Well, when you were talking, I just, you know, with the scene between him and Iceman in the locker room, it's just, yeah, there's this constant competitive, but yet they're all, everyone's on the same side. And that's just another theme that's through the movie. I mean, you can pick out so many different themes. That's what makes it a great movie.
Back to that scene real quick. I choke up for some reason during that scene. I don't know what it is, but it's like, you know, when someone can be the better person and not have a chance to break someone down who's already down and, you know, support them. It's just something that always gets me, and I get choked up every time I see that scene. It's like, and together.
Well, and when Goose's wife,
Meg Ryan,
you know, yeah, Meg Ryan, when she comes up and, you know, hugs him, and, you know, she doesn't blame him either. And yeah, that's another scene that it's like, you know, he would still be flying with or without you. So, yeah.
I forgot about that scene. Stop blaming yourself.
And that's just another one where she's like, she knows exactly who she married and it's not Maverick's fault. And that's a really good scene too.
Yeah. Well, I just want to mention, I want to mention that Top Gun was the big moneymaker of 1986. It came in at $176 million. That was a lot of money back then.
let's
head into June here. This is the final
month. Probably should.
That we're covering here. We got some good films here.
Yes.
On June 6th, we had Invader from Mars, one of my underrated Schwarzenegger films, Raw Deal, and a wonderful fun movie called Space Camp,
which holds a very special place for me, I must say, Mr. Reitzel.
I know. June 11th, we got Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Well, of course.
And June 13th, we got Back to School, Rodney Dangerfield's big comedy hit. We had The Manhattan Project, Mona Lisa, Never Too Young to Die. June 18th, we had Legal Eagles. June 20th, we had, we had two big movies going up next to each other. This was a big, big weekend. We had The Karate Kid Part 2. And My Little Pony, the movie. And the last weekend, we had four films come out here. We had American Anthem, Labyrinth, Running Scared, and Ruthless People. Kyle, I want to start with you first of all. We may have to break this off the first half of the month here, but let me start with you. Out of all these films, which is the biggest one for you right now?
Well, I think you can't, I mean, as far as when I look at them, the biggest one, I think, period, is Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I think Ferris Bueller's Day Off goes down as one of the quintessential 80s movies of all time. But, I mean, the list of movies that I just are my, I have special places for are on this Space Camp, I'm With You, a Raw Deal. I think that's a very underrated Schwarzenegger film. Always a big, been a fan of the Manhattan Project. Of course, you've got Karate Kid Part 2 and Labyrinth. I mean, Labyrinth to this day is still such an amazing movie as far as just the special effects and the Henson magic yet again.
Amy, what about you? What movies, and we'll dive a little deeper into these films, but what movies jump out at you before we kind of start targeting specific movies?
Well, I'm going to start with The Karate Kid Part 2 because Karate Kid was so major in my life. Just when did that first one come out? Was it 84?
84, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so 2 years. And it was just such a good, good movie. And then there was Part 2. And for me, it was a letdown, usually as most Part 2s are. But obviously, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, I mean, everyone saw that. And it came out right at the end of school, so it was just perfect.
That's right.
My dad was always quoting Back to School. That's Rodney Dangerfield, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I ain't got no class. My dad. It's just, that's his sense of humor. So, but I didn't see it, but I know that one quote. And then, of course, Labyrinth. That one, I remember my friends talking me into going to see that because they were like, oh, it's so good. And I'm like, David Bowie, whatever. But then they took me to it and I fell in love with it. Yeah, the puppeteering there and the story, the little, I mean, it's your Alice in Wonderland in the 80s, you know, it just is weird and wonderful.
I had made a confession at the end of the last episode of the, you know, that we listed five films that we were going to touch base on. And one of them I had not seen was Labyrinth, and I didn't see it for like 10 years later. And I don't know what it was. I don't know if it just wasn't, I didn't catch it, or it's one of those movies I think I would have seen because of the puppetry and the imagery, and it just looked really, and you know, the people that were in it, I was like, I should have seen this film, but I just, for some reason was not on my radar and I didn't see it. Obviously Ferris Bueller's Day Off. That was huge for me, you know, getting off of school and watching this. I remember going back the exact next day to see the film. And as I mentioned in the last episode, it had that end scene, you know, that Deadpool kind of made fun of and did an homage to. And you didn't see that with movies back in those days.
Well, the breaking of the fourth wall.
Yeah, exactly. The breaking the fourth wall and the end scene. And I remember it. I didn't notice that till the second time I saw it, because when I went back to go see it, friends of mine saying, you got to wait through the credits. I was like, why? It's like, there's more Ferris Bueller. I was like, oh my gosh. Space Camp. Oh my gosh. Now I want to touch on this real quick, with you, Kyle. I know this is a film I didn't see when it first came out either. Saw it on VHS later on, starring Kate Capshaw, Leah Thompson, Kelly Preston, Tate Donovan, who did not want to go to space camp and then get shot up accidentally in a space shuttle.
Okay. Now, Kevin, you have to understand why this movie is so special for me. Okay, let's not forget a very young Joaquin Phoenix in this film.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so first of all, I think...
Okay, so why is this so special for you?
First of all, we got to address the fact that America's sweetheart Leah Thompson was in this
film
at the time. I mean, but no, in 88, I went to the space camp, or at the time was the next level up, the Space Academy. Now, if you remember the movie...
No, wait, where was that?
In Huntsville, Alabama.
Okay, that's right, yeah.
Now, if you remember in the movie, one of the big deals was the spinning circles with the pilot thing where you had to level... She had to level it out.
Yes.
Now, when you go to space camp, Space Academy, the first thing they have you do is take a test. And when you take this test, that's where you get you do two missions. And one mission, you're in mission control, and one mission, you're in the shuttle. So, based off this test, that's where they assign you. I took the test, and guess who was the pilot for a mission?
Kyle Wagner.
So, needless to say, the initial panic of, oh my God, I've got to do this spinning thing with this joystick, kicked in, only to find out that the joystick in question was a dummy joystick that they had put on there just for the film.
Oh, how funny.
But so I'm sitting here doing all this stuff, and I'm thinking, I've seen all these actors do all this stuff as I'm doing this, but you know.
Hold on. You've seen the film, and then you're doing the camp.
Yeah, I did. The film came out in '86. I was old enough to go in '88.
Okay.
So, I mean, it was a great experience. It got me out of the last month of middle school. They said you're going to learn more in 1 week at space camp than you will the entire month of a final month of school. So I was like, okay, I'll work with that.
If anyone has on a side note, if anyone has a chance to go to the Space and Rocket Museum there in Huntsville, Alabama, I highly recommend it. I went there recently, actually, to go see Star Wars: The Force Awakens was showing in 70mm IMAX, which was in only of like 15 or 20 locations around the world. They have that great domed IMAX theater there. And you could also obviously take the tour and check out all of the rockets and the spaceships, and they have the full one of the space shuttles on display there. It's just a really great place, and they still have the active space camps there, which is really, really cool. Yeah.
Now, there was one in June, Kevin, in that first week with same time Space Camp came out, that I know is a special place for you, and that's Raw Deal.
Yes. Now, this is another film I did not see on open. I did not see it that year. It was on VHS. This is Arnold Schwarzenegger's. He plays a small town sheriff, and he has to help his friend out in the FBI because there's a mole that they're working with, the Chicago Mafia. And he has to fake his death and go in as a mobster and get in with these guys and try to tear them apart from inside. And it's a really good Arnold action film. And it gets in with the Chicago Mafia, and it's one of my favorites. I love the cast in here. It's got Sam Wanamaker. It's got Robert Davi, who we know is one of the bad guys in the Goonies. Catherine Harold is in it. Darren McGavin. It has one of the cheesy, you know how Arnold Schwarzenegger movies always have cheesy one-liners, yes. Cheesy jokes, you know. His wife is angry with him because he has to do this, and she gets drunk and she throws a cake at him and it misses him. And he goes, "You should not drink and bake." But there's a great scene in there where he's getting ready to, you know, open up a can of whoop butt on the bad guys at one of their gravel plants where they have a lot of money laundering going on. And he puts in the cassette tape in his convertible, and he has all of his guns, and Rolling Stones' Satisfaction kicks in, and he starts going in and kicking butt. But it's one of my favorite Arnold Schwarzenegger films. I think he did that. Is it right before Commando?
Commando
was 88, wasn't it?
No, Commando was earlier than that. I think Commando was it? Okay. I think this was after Commando. So,
but he was still in that top form, you know, yeah. He still had all of his, you know, muscles, his Conan muscles and stuff. But, Amy, did you see Space Camp? I don't remember if I asked you or not. Did you see that movie?
No, I didn't see that, but it sounds very awesome. I think I need to go back and see it.
Yeah, it's a really good one. I never did see Invader from Mars. Did you, Kyle?
It's been a long time, and I just remember it getting a lot of hype when it came out, and I just remember it bombed. And I saw it on cable several years later, and I was like, yep, it makes perfect sense why this did not go over well.
Of course, we had Back to School, which was a huge comedy hit, as you mentioned, Amy. Now, Amy, did you said your dad was a fan of it. Did you see it with him?
Nope, I did not. I don't do that type of humor, so it had no interest, but my dad kept quoting.
Yeah. That was a young Robert Downey Jr. was in that as well, with Sally Kellerman. And,
a lot of people consider that this or Caddyshack to be Rodney Dangerfield's best film.
Yeah, I would go Caddyshack personally, but yeah, this was a huge hit. It was very, very funny. Let me ask you guys about, now I never did see The Manhattan Project, but you did, Kyle?
Oh yeah, I was a big fan of this film. John Lithgow, you had a young Cynthia Nixon in this film from Sex and the City. Just kind of dealing with the nuclear time. You have a high school student who basically gets over his head with a project and gets involved in some things. It's a very typical 80s film. Hmm. It probably doesn't hold up quite so well now, but there's just something about it that always sat well with me.
There is a film here I have never seen. I kind of want to see it now after seeing who's in it. Is Never Too Young to Die.
I've never seen this.
John Stamos, Vanity, and Gene Simmons. And it says a top secret agent is murdered, so his estranged son, a high school gymnast, teams up with his dad's attractive female partner to stop the psychopathic gang leader who killed him, now plans a major terrorist attack. That sounds so cheesy, but awesome.
How crazy.
Now, I want to touch on Karate Kid Part 2 real quick. Amy, you said you were a little disappointed by it. Yeah, it wasn't as good as the first one, but the thing that was really awesome about it was that it took place right after the first one.
Yeah.
Yes.
How often did you see that at that point with sequels?
No, you did not. And Martin Cove, who played Kreese, you know, the leader of the Cobra Kai, he came out, and I remember he was trying to hit Miyagi, and he missed and hit the car window, and he did it with his other hand. And so, but, you know, I know this was a big film for Norm. he had a little crush on, one of the actresses here. I thought it was a decent sequel. It was nice to kind of see some backstory on Miyagi. and you know, Daniel LaRusso traveling with him and getting some, you know, backstory with that. I thought it was a really good story. To me, I think it held up. What about you, Kyle?
I thought when you look at it comparatively, it was not the first film, and I don't think anything can be that first film. That first film is something special. But there were some very good elements in this film. I like kind of going back into Miyagi's history. You had the hit song from Peter Cetera in this in this film. The thing I'll always remember is the scene where he is breaking the ice.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. By the way, Tamlin Tamita is the actress that Norm had a little crush on.
I mean,
that's for you, Norm.
Again, it's a solid film. It's just nowhere near the original. The original is just so special. You know, now Kevin, I know you saw My Little Pony the movie more times than you saw Top Gun.
No,
I don't think I've ever seen this movie. The only thing I remember from the aspect of it was. I used it to torture many fans of the newer version of My Little Pony. I said, "Oh, you got to go check out the retro version of it," and they would go see it, and then they wouldn't like me too much. So,
I want to mention a film because I have never seen it, but it was the film all the grown-ups were going to see. It was Legal Eagles,
yeah,
because it was directed by Ivan Reitman, starring Robert Redford, Deborah Winger, Daryl Hannah. I did not see this film, but my parents were like, "Oh, we got to go see Legal." It was the film that the older people were going to see. Amy, did you see this film?
I looked at the preview and I think I want to say I have, but I don't remember. But yeah, I mean, Robert Redford, definitely to the older crowd. And yeah, I remember my parents seeing it too. Talking about it and stuff. I'm pretty sure I didn't, because Daryl Hannah, I would have remembered. I mean, she's fabulous. And so I'm pretty sure I didn't, but I remember hearing about it, but I think it was too adult or something. I don't know.
Let's touch on Labyrinth again. And I want to get your opinion on this, Kyle. Did you see this when it first opened?
Yeah, I did go see this at the theaters. I mean, again, I'm a Henson nut. So if it has Jim Henson's name, I'm at least going to go check it out. I thought, you know, I was already a fan of The Dark Crystal, and I just thought, even compared to The Dark Crystal, this movie is so unique and it's just so special. The characters they developed, you've got David Bowie in there, you've got a very young Jennifer Connelly before, you know, she really kind of blew up on the big screen. I think Labyrinth is still to this day some of the Henson Company's best work ever.
You made a good point there. I was a huge fan of The Dark Crystal. I love that film. And I just don't know why I just didn't see this movie. I don't know. You're right.
I think within Labyrinth's case of it comes out any other year and it's a lot bigger film. There's just it got wrapped up in way too many big films that overshot. It's one of these victims of 1986 being such a good year for movies. It just got kind of lost in the shuffle a little bit. And I think it's one of those films, as it came out in VHS and DVD, that's where a lot of people picked up on it.
Agreed. Yeah, it definitely found its legs on home video later on. And I liked it. I thought it was great. Of course, I didn't find that out until about 10 years later. Now, I want to mention two other films here. Ruthless People. I mentioned that earlier in the last episode, but this one was a huge film. It had Bette Midler, Danny DeVito, Judge Reinhold. It was an R-rated comedy. It did really, really well. I think I saw this. I may have seen it on VHS later on because it was R-rated. It was a Touchstone film, which is a Disney parent. Disney's a parent company. But it was a huge hit. Kyle, did you end up seeing this film?
It's been a long time since I've seen it. Like you, I think I saw it on VHS. It was a huge hit. It's a kind of a dark comedy.
Yeah.
It's basically cutthroat between all of these people. But I remember it's always kind of had a special spot in that 1986 and in that comedy for that time. And I think more than anything because of the cast.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got a huge cast. And I seem to remember it was in the theater for quite a long time. It was one of the bigger moneymakers, and I'll touch on that in a minute. But when you said it came to cast, obviously you got Danny DeVito, Bette Midler, Judge Reinhold, Helen Slater, Bill Pullman. just a great cast. It was very, very funny. But I didn't see it when it first came out, though. But it was one of those that also did well on home video later on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite films, one of my favorite buddy cop films of all time came out, and that's Running Scared with Gregory Hines and Billy Crystal.
You want to talk about your oddball matchups?
Exactly. I remember the previews were done really well, and it was about these two Chicago. Here, I'll read the IMDb thing. It says two streetwise Chicago cops have to shake off some rust after returning from Key West vacation to pursue a drug dealer who nearly killed them in the past. Now, Billy Crystal, he was in his prime, and of course, Gregory Hines was coming off White Nights, and he had some comedic acting talents. And these two really, really did a great job in this film. The chemistry between the two. Amy, did you see this film when it came out at all? Did you like it?
Not until much, much later when it was, out on VHS. And I did see it. And, it's your cops that don't really follow the rule books, that type of trope. And, I thought that they played off each other very well. I remember liking it and laughing. So
you had Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines. You had Stephen Bauer. You had Joe Pantoliano. He played Snake. He was one of the snitches. Dan Hedaya was Captain Logan. Of course, Dan Hedaya was the father in Clueless.
Yes.
And also the terrorist bad guy in Commando. but it was great because it had a great soundtrack. And, of course, you see them take their vacation down to the Key West. And I think it was it a Michael McDonald song? What was that big hit on that one? I can't remember.
I can't remember. Yeah, it's been so long since I've seen it. But, I know what you're talking about.
But there was really funny because they had the unmarked police car that was a cab, and then the bad guys found out about it and spray painted it. But there was a great chase scene where they have to take the car onto the L, which is the subway, that goes above the street. So they call it, because it's elevated, so they call it the L there. It was a great chase scene there. And of course, Jimmy Smits plays the bad guy. It was one of his first major roles. It was just a really good buddy cop film, which was a popular thing to see back there in the 80s, of course, with the Lethal Weapon films and Tango and Cash and all these other films. But that was one of my – I still love watching that movie. I never get tired of that. So that basically covers up June of our 3 months here. Now, I wanted to mention in the top 10 box office films, several of these films are in there. Number one, of course, was Top Gun. Karate Kid was number four at $115 million. Top Gun was $176 million. Back to School was number six at $91 million.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Ruthless People was at number nine with $71 million. And squeaking in at number 10 was Ferris Bueller's Day Off with just under at $70 million. So obviously these 3 months were really big. A lot of these movies hung around a long time. I think Cobra probably only lasted about a week or two and then went straight to video. but it was the summer movie season was launching here, and, Top Gun obviously hung around for a very, very long time. Kyle, I want to ask you real quick, when you look back on these movies here, what would you like to say about these? Let's kind of put Top Gun off to the side, because I think we all feel that's probably the big one. Name a couple of these films that jump out. If I had to say, Kyle, give me a couple of your favorites here, what would it be?
Well, I think outside of Top Gun, the top of the list has to be Ferris Bueller. I mean,
yeah,
when you talk 80s movies, that's quintessential. Sloan Peterson, Cameron, the car, Twist and Shout. I mean, come on now.
Who doesn't think of that song, not the Beatles, that version of the Beatles song, Twist and Shout, and you don't think of Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Yeah. Labyrinth, obviously, for me, big deal. Space Camp. You go back short circuit. I think starting in May of 86, you really start hitting the meat of that year. And I mean, it just goes, and when we get into part three, I mean, the movies we're going to hit in part three are going to be just outstanding.
Amy, what about you? Other than Top Gun, what other films jump out at you as some of your favorites?
Well, Kyle sort of stole them all.
Sorry.
You can agree with him.
Okay. Well, definitely, I would say Short Circuit. Putting Top Gun aside, Short Circuit definitely was a big one. And, of course, Ferris Bueller. And, you know, listening to the list, I mean, if you're looking at the top 10 box offices, office gross earnings, I mean, that's 5 out of 10. You've got half of your, you know, money makers in these 3 months. I mean, so that's pretty significant. And yeah, the summer movies were huge hits, and I just think it was great. Labyrinth, I definitely was glad that my friends dragged me to that. I really enjoyed that. So those would be my ones that I would like to mention.
Yeah, I usually like to judge these films on whether or not they still hold up. And as we mentioned earlier, obviously Top Gun does. You know, Karate Kid Part 2, that for me, doesn't really hold up as well as it used to. Like I said, though, Running Scared for me does. Love Band of the Hand. Love Cobra. It's real cheesy, but I love Cobra and Raw Deal. But Space Camp 2 and Ferris Bueller, those are ones that still hold up to me as, you know, good films. You know, Back to School is funny, but it doesn't quite hold up as well as it used to. Those are the ones that definitely jump out for me.
Now, Kevin, real quick. Yeah? Well, you know, I am the anime guy around here, so.
Oh, yes.
86. Well, since I'm here, you know, I want to hit you because 86 was a very interesting year in anime, and there was a couple big things. In the movies category for anime, a big one, a big Miyazaki film hit in 1986. Castle in the Sky made its debut in 1986.
It's that old?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Here's one for you, too. The first Fist of the North Star film came out in 1986.
I had no idea. I thought these were like 90s
yeah, no.
stuff, man. I mean, I'm so behind the curve on anime.
Yeah, here's a couple of other things for our anime fans. Dirty Pair Project Eden movie. You had Gal Force, which was a very popular 80s anime. You also had Project Echo, which was very big, as well as They Were 11. Now, that's just in the movies. If I go to the original video animations, a few things stand out. The original Armor Trooper Votoms, the original Bio Booster Armor Giver anime came out. Dan Cougar, Super Beast Machine God for all the mecha fans out there. We also had MD Geist, which is more well-known than anything of being a main...
Say that again? What was it called?
MD Geist.
Okay, I've heard of that.
It's not a good anime, but it's most well-known because that character was used as kind of the symbol for a major company, Central Park Media. So that character became fairly well known before his look. And when you look at television series, a little TV show called Dragon Ball started in 1986.
Wow, really?
Yeah. A couple others of note, a new Gundam series, Mobile Suit Gundam Double Zeta came out, as well as Machine Robo, which Machine Robo was actually the show that brought us a lot of the original GoBots.
Wow.
So just a few little things.
I loved me some GoBots. I know they were kind of like the, you know, the cheesier, you know, was it Transformers, but I loved the GoBots.
So since I was here, I just wanted to impart some knowledge onto people.
Well, I appreciate that. Amy, do you have any comment on the animes that came out?
Probably.
Wow. Haven't recognized one of them. But thank you for sharing.
I just want to know if any of those jumped out at you. These names I'm familiar with because I've heard some of these, but I didn't realize they came out that early. I mean, a lot of these came out on video and DVD later on in the 90s. And I guess we're kind of making a surgence. And of course, you know, Robotech came out in 86 and then the Transformers film, but wow, that's weird. I didn't realize that it came out that early. That's cool. Now, Kyle, this is your first time on the Fandom Flashback 86. I want to ask you about some of the TV shows here. You know, okay. Amy was on the last one. We kind of talked about these. The most popular TV shows in 86, number one was Cosby Show, followed by Family Ties, Cheers, Murder, She Wrote, Golden Girls, 60 Minutes, Night Court, Growing Pains, Moonlighting, and Who's the Boss to round out the top 10. Were you watching must-see TV, Cosby Show, Family Ties?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Cosby Show, Family Ties. Was, of course, Michael J. Fox. He was everywhere. Probably, though, if you want to talk about like what's on that list that stood out for me in 1986, I was a huge Night Court fan. Harry Anderson, yeah. John, to this day, I'm a huge John Larroquette fan.
He was good in that, yeah.
Dan Fielding.
So good.
What was the name of the actress that was the – who was the co-star in that?
Markie Post.
I had a huge crush on – yes, Markie Post.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, she had Richard Mall as Bull.
Yeah. It's funny. As I mentioned in the last one, I didn't catch that when it first aired. I think I caught it when it was in, because it went on for several years. Caught it in its tail run, and then I caught it on reruns and such. But you know, Moonlighting was a huge fan thing around the house. We would always watch and loved Growing Pains. Young Leonardo DiCaprio was on that.
Yep, absolutely.
Of course, Kirk Cameron before Milano.
He completely lost his mind, but.
But yeah.
Yes, and we can never forget Alyssa Milano.
Yes, and Who's the Boss? Yeah. Now I want to mention to you guys the hits. Now we covered the months April, May, and June. Music was obviously big. I want to mention the big hits during those months. From March 29th through April 18th, we had Falco, Rock Me Amadeus. April 19th through May 2nd, we had Prince and the Revolution with Kiss. Was it Tom Jones went on to cover that later on?
I believe it was Tom Jones. Himself.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good version. I still like that. I actually kind of like his version better now. and then one of my favorite songs of the 80s, May 3rd through May 9th, we had Robert Palmer, Addicted to Love.
Oh, come on. You don't get more 80s than Robert Palmer.
Now, let me ask you, and I want to ask you about this, Amy. Robert Palmer, for me, was the quintessential cool rock and roll guy, because he sang rock and roll music in a nice three-piece suit. You know, he just was always dressed to the nines, and I thought that was the coolest look for a rock star, singing that type of music. Amy, what did you think about Robert Palmer?
He was great. Yeah, and he always did, well, like that black and white, you know, because he was in the suit, and then the girls all around him, and you know, and then they'd have like this flash of a red heel. And so it was like this monochromatic and then this pop of color. And he just, it was fabulous. I mean, it's funny because whenever you say these movies or these songs, the music videos were so prevalent. And it's like you don't say a song without remembering the video back in
exactly
those days.
We lost him several years ago. He died way too young, but what's funny is my favorite Robert Palmer song was actually made it in, it wasn't Addicted to Love, but it was in the top 40 for that year at number 40 with I Didn't Mean to Turn You On. And I love the sound of that. I love the lyrics in that song. And it's one of my favorite Robert Palmer songs. One of my favorite songs from the 80s.
See, to me, I'm Simply Irresistible.
Yeah. And that had a great hook to it. And I'm glad you brought that up, Kyle. And I want to put this out to you and Amy and the listeners. There's a certain sound bite that is in that song where it goes Simply Irresistible, and you hear kind of like the sound of like swords crossing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I've never to this day quite figured out where that sound comes from, if it comes from like a synthesizer or what, and how they chose that. But have you guys noticed, Amy, have you noticed that?
No, I'm going to have to go back and listen to it.
Yeah,
now.
Listen to it. There's right between the cuts, there's, you know, when he comes down to the end of that part of the chorus, there's that it sounds like two swords crossing, but it sounds really cool. Okay, so back to the top song. So after Addicted to Love, May 10th through the 16th, we had West End Girls with Pet Shop Boys. And then we had May 17th through June 6th, we had Whitney Houston with Greatest Love of All.
Oh, fantastic.
June 7th through June 13th, we had Madonna, Live to Tell.
Got a great Madonna song. I was a fan of that one.
That was from a movie this list.
Was it At Close Range with Sean Penn? That was also on the list. That was the one we covered last time, and At Close Range with Christopher Walken and Sean Penn, and his brother was in that one as well. Yeah. And by the way, I just watched that on VHS. you know how we had those little cyber attacks across America where we had Twitter went down and stuff like that. Remember that, Kyle?
Yeah.
This is my defiance. I'm like, you know what? If I can't watch my Netflix, I still can watch media on VHS. So I busted that out, watched that film, and it's a powerful film. It's really good. I forgot how good that movie was. The last song I wanted to mention, I'm having trouble remembering this song, but it was a hit. Number one, June 14th through July 4th, Patti LaBelle and Michael McDonald on My Own. You guys familiar?
On My Own. Yeah. And then she would sing, and then he would come in with some fast words. Yeah. On My Own. And then he would sing with some fast words there.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember it. I don't remember the words, but yeah. Oh, I can hear it. It's in my mind. If you were in my mind, you would know it.
So anyway, that covers the music there, though. And, you know, we did cover some celebrity births that turning 30 this year in 2016. That makes me feel old. Of course, Lady Gaga, she's doing it. The Oprah Winfrey Show started. Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen. Shia LaBeouf and Megan Fox. Robert Pattinson. Leah Dunham. Leah Michelle. All turning 30, making us feel very
old. I'm thinking there might even be a few births that we might want to take the DeLorean and prevent from
1980s. Oh,
Kyle went there.
I mean, would we really miss Lindsay Lohan?
Oh
my gosh.
Bad, Kyle.
Emilia Clarke and Kit Harington from Game of Thrones were born in 86.
Winter is coming, Jon Snow.
That's right. That's right. Computer programmer and activist Aaron Schwartz was also born in 1986. One thing I wanted to mention, I wanted to ask you, Kyle.
Yeah.
Did you, and I mentioned it in the last episode, did you watch Geraldo Rivera opening up supposedly Al Capone's vault? Did you watch that on live TV?
Yes, when I was editing that and put that together and heard you guys talking about that, all I can remember is we were watching it and it was taking him forever. And we literally got bored with it and turned it off. And the next morning when we saw the footage, because I think in Alaska time, it started like at like 4 p.m. because of the airing. And everybody was just so bored with it. And then when we found out it was a total bust, and you guys are right on the head. If this would have happened in today's society, his career would have been over before the show even finished. With social media, the Twitter and Facebook would have been merciless.
What about Batman: The Dark Knight Returns? This is in your wheelhouse here.
Oh, you are talking about a comic book that changed the landscape.
Yeah, I mean, it changed everything.
Frank Miller hit that book, and Frank Miller: Dark Knight Returns is responsible for kind of bringing the mature age of comics that hit in the late 80s and early 90s. You saw a lot of Batman books that were, you know, you're talking Killing Joke, you're talking The Cult, several of the Death in the Family storyline. You started seeing a lot more of the hardcore Wolverine stories over from Marvel. You even saw some darker Spider-Man stories. One of the ones that stands out is Kraven's Last Hunt, but it all starts with The Dark Knight Returns and probably Watchmen. And
yeah.
You know,
well, let me ask you this. You're a video game guy like I am, Kyle. We had The Legend of Zelda come out on the NES.
And video games were changed for forever.
Now, I have a confession to make.
You've never played it.
maybe once. I never got into Zelda.
I love the first game. Not a fan of the second one. And then it was kind of on and off since then. But to this day, they're just... I can always remember the amazing ads Nintendo ran for Zelda, including the Zelda rap ad.
Yeah, everyone, I know so many people, they're still like, you know, they just love Zelda and it's this legendary game and I give it props for that, but I just never got into it. Amy, I want to ask you, when it came to the NES system, did you get into that game or any of the other, you know, NES system games?
No. That wasn't your thing? No, it wasn't. We didn't have any game systems at our house, at either of my houses. My parents, we just didn't get into it.
I think the NES, I mean, the NES is solely responsible for bringing video games back into homes after Atari bombed out after E.T. And so right. The original NES just has an incredible place in video gaming history that nobody will ever be able to take away.
Okay, Kyle, before we end this thing, I got to ask you two things because I think you have an interesting perspective growing up in Alaska. There's two things I have to ask you about. First of all, how did Alaska deal with Hands Across America?
Thank you, because I was going to ask if you didn't bring it up.
Okay, if I remember right, Hands Across America was in the summertime. I remember people doing it, but obviously, you know, it was just kind of a lot of Alaska just kind of has that different mentality. Like, yeah, okay, whatever.
I mean, did you guys like just go to a bar and just hold hands, or did you try to go across the state?
Some people did try to go across the state, but you know, it's one of those things. It's summertime in Alaska, and we enjoy it while we can because it's so short. So, like, yeah, okay, we got better things to do with our time
than to stand around and hold hands. Yeah. Got it.
I had to ask. Okay, one other thing I have to ask you. Uh-huh. The Halley's Comet was the most visible it would have been because every 75 years you're supposed to be able to see this thing. For me personally, I remember going, I really don't care. I remember they were making a big deal at school. But yeah. What about you, Amy? Was that a big deal for you?
Yes, it was a big deal. Then you mention it. I'm like, oh my gosh, I remember learning about it and, you know, learning about its trail and that it goes around every 75 years and that this would be once in a lifetime deal. And trying to remember.
That means they were all thinking we were going to die before the next time it came around.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I remember it was made a pretty big deal.
Kyle, no, wait, hold on. Kyle, Kyle. Now, I bet you guys got a really good view because isn't Alaska closer to Halley's Comet?
Yeah, but the problem was when it came, it was summertime, and we're talking 24-hour daylight.
Oh, wow, that's right. You guys have
I thought it came in and it was in daylight or something, so it was like even harder to see or something. I remember that.
Yeah, everybody made this big deal out of it, and then like nobody could see it. Unless you had like a really powerful telescope.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. Kyle, really appreciate you being on here. Before we kind of wrap things up real quick, you know, Kyle, anything you want to say about these 3 months here?
I think we got some all-time classic 80s films in there. We've got some films that have stood the test of time. You can definitely make the argument for 1986 being one of the greatest years of movies ever, if not the greatest year of movies. I think if nothing else, you walk out of 86 realizing there was a lot of movies that changed a lot of things for Hollywood, and a lot of it was for the better.
Yeah, there's a lot more risks that were being taken with the movie industry back at this time, and everyone wasn't caught up on, you know, opening box office receipts, and, you know, they kind of believed in the longevity of a theater and a movie. And of course, you know, VHS and all that home video was making a big impact. Amy, any last comments, any thoughts you want to say on these 3 months here?
Yeah. Well, April was no good for me. May and June certainly made up for it. Just the movies were so good. They affected me. I enjoyed them. I still remember them. And I think that's incredible being 30 years later when I can hardly remember why I walk into a room nowadays sometimes. I really do. I'm feeling your case that 1986, you know, is a very good year for movies.
Yeah, and they're all 30 years old, making us feel a little old. Well, I just want to mention that we have some other great shows here on the Fandom Podcast Network. As I mentioned at the top of the show, got my buddy Kyle here. He's my co-host on Culture Clash, our weekly fandom show. Kyle, what do we got coming up?
Well, we just had an episode with Michael Morse from Cloud City Casino talking a lot of Shin Godzilla, and I have it on. I finally got the shipment of Triangle Food, so there's a very good chance for the next Culture Clash we might be able to bait the Clifton at least. Probably never back into the basement again, but back into the studio.
That's right, Matthew Clifton. We need to get him in here because he had a really cool meet and greet with a new Ahsoka book that come out for Star Wars fans. And he got to meet the author as well as the star, Ashley, who does the voice of Ahsoka on the audiobook. So we'll have to pull that out of him. Also, we have the Blood of Kings Highlander podcast that I co-host with my buddy Norman. We had a really good interview recently with Anthony DeLongis, swordmaster, whipmaster, actor, stuntman, wonderful guy. And he's also going to be at the Highlander 30th Anniversary Convention in Lakeland, Florida on December 3rd and 4th that Kyle and I are going to be at. Looking forward to that.
Well, let's add
that's exciting.
Davis Grayson will be joining us at least for part of
that's
that
right.
convention.
Yep. Yeah, we're really, really excited about that. And we also just dropped newest episode of Blood of Kings. We have Norman and I talk about the 30th anniversary Blu-ray edition that came out for Highlander, and we talked about all the special features and whether or not we feel that it was worth getting, and how we felt about this, you know, the special features and all the other stuff that came on it there. So give a really good insight on that. Latest episode of Couch Potato Theater, we covered The Last Starfighter that Norman and Davis Grayson also did in awesome job on the commentary on the second part, and
we're getting a lot of positive response to that too, so I want to thank
that was a lot of fun. Kyle and I got to get on with the first part of that with the retrospective with those guys. They did a great job on the audio commentary. Of course, you're listening to the Fandom Flashback. We have another one coming up here, and I'll tell you about that in just a moment. But if you're a football fan, please check out The End Zone, our weekly NFL wrap-up show.
Kevin.
Kyle, I'm sure you have something to say about that, you being my co-host for The End Zone.
Yeah. Do we allow you on that show anymore?
When it comes to fantasy football, probably not.
Yeah, it's been a rough couple weeks for you, my friend.
Yeah, it has. It has been fantasy football-wise. And, of course, last week your Chiefs beat up on my Raiders. But my Raiders bounced back this week and went down to Jacksonville and then won that there. But we should mention, Kyle, that you and I, we're going to be watching a game this weekend together coming up. We're recording this episode, by the way, on October 24th. This coming weekend, I'm coming down there to Tampa area to see you, and we're going to go see the Raiders play Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, we get to see Jameis Winston light up the Raiders secondary. That's a beautiful thing. No, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. We got a few exciting things planned, and I know you got some good plans with your Raiders super fan friends, and it's going to be a good time. And so it could always be a little dangerous when members of the Fandom Podcast Network get together too. So
that's right. That's right. Yeah. We have a bunch of Raiders super fans coming from California and around the country. We also have Keith Smith and his daughter Kelly coming from England for the game as well. So we're going to have a big group of fun people hanging out for that. Davis Grace and I also did a Rogue One reaction show about the latest and final trailer for the Rogue One Star Wars standalone film. So check that out. You can find all of these awesome programs on the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, on Facebook, Fandom Podcast Network. You can also find the Blood of Kings Highlander fan group on Facebook as well. Please email us. We'd love to get emails here at the Fandom Podcast Network. We'll read them on the air. We'd love to get some feedback. And you can reach us there at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Fandom Podcast Network is on Instagram as well. Also Twitter, please hit us up there at Fan Pod Network. Kyle, where can we find you on Twitter?
Well, you can find me at A Kyle W on the good old Twitter.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at Spartan_Phoenix. You can also find me on Instagram there as well. Amy, where can we find you on Twitter?
Well, you can find me at Miss Amy Nelson.
All right. Yes. I want to ask you guys real quick here before we sign off. Next time for part three, for Fandom Flashback 1986, we're going to cover the months of July, August, and September. And a few of the films we're going to cover there is Big Trouble in Little China, Aliens, The Fly, Stand By Me, and, of course, Crocodile Dundee. Amy, any of these films jump out at you going, wow, I have a certain memory with one of these?
Oh, well, Aliens for sure. And you know I don't like scary movies, so I don't know what I was doing watching that. And The Fly, again, another scary movie. I don't know what I was doing watching that.
That movie was creepy.
I know, it was. Oh, yeah. And, of course, Crocodile Dundee. That was amazing as well. So those really pop out.
What about you, Kyle? Any of those jump out at you?
Oh, they're all outstanding movies. Stand By Me is always going to have a special place.
Yeah.
Big Trouble in Little China, Crocodile Dundee, and... you know, Aliens, and, you know, since the only thing I have to say about Aliens, man, is game over, man! Game over!
Put her in charge!
it's the only way to be sure.
Well, I'd like to thank my co-host, Mr. Kyle Wagner, and Amy Nelson. Thank you guys so much for joining me on this special presentation of Fandom Flashback, Part 2 of 1986, the movies, 30 years later. Until next time, I'm Kevin, and I'll see you in 1986. Goodbye.